Order. This is a meeting of the Champaign County Board of Committee of the Whole for Eluck Highway and County Facilities. It's Tuesday, March 6, 2012. Time is 6:03. Please turn off your cell phones or put them on silent or vibrate. Roll call, please.
Howard?
Here.
Ansley?
Here.
Holderfield?
Here.
James?
Here.
Jay?
Here.
Kibler?
Here.
Kurtz? Langenheim?
Here.
Maxwell?
Here.
McKenzie? Michael?
Here.
Mitchell? Moser? O'Connor?
Here.
Petrie?
Here.
Quisenberry? Richards?
Here.
Rosales? Schrader?
Here.
Alex?
Here.
Ammons?
Here.
Anderson?
Here.
Bensel?
Here.
Burson?
Here.
Betts?
Here.
Carter?
Here.
Weigel?
Here. We have a quorum. Mr. McGinty and Mr. Mitchell indicated me earlier they could not make this meeting. I want to apologize. At last board meeting, I did not announce that Ms. Michaels and Ms. Anderson and Mr. Moser were not at that meeting, so I apologize for not announcing that, Ms. Michaels. Seek approval of the minutes for the Committee of the Whole for February 7th, 2012.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Jay, second by Mr. Esrae. Discussion. Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Approval of the agenda and any addendum. Moved by Mr. Carter, second by Mr. James. Discussion, Ms. Ammons.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to take item F1 and separate, strike off the pre-design plan.
I'm sorry.
On the agenda.
That's one item on the agenda. I'm trying to think.
Facilities, isn't it?
It's on facilities, yeah.
It's under facilities, F1. The approval of release of RFP.
So you wanna, let's have a motion.
I move to strike pre-design plan
okay.
from F1.
Okay. Is there a second? Second by Ms. Kohler. Discussion. Ms. Ammons.
The reason why I'm asking to strike pre-design plan on this, and I think we've talked about it for several weeks, is that the RFP, and it's written in a specific way, but the RFP gets at the heart of why we are having a discussion about the needs of the jail in the first place. And at this time, I don't think we are at the stage of a pre-design plan, but more the scope of a needs assessment study that's listed in the RFP that we'll discuss tonight.
Further discussion. Mr. Alex.
I guess I'm going to vent a little bit of frustration here. I mean, this RFP has been in the works for 6 weeks, 5 weeks, and I mean, I've supported continuing it a couple or deferring it a couple times because I do think we need a chance to get everybody's feedback into it. I mean, I've provided feedback, others have provided feedback, and I'm a little concerned. I'm happy to discuss the RFP tonight, but I'm not sure that changing the description of it on the agenda is an appropriate way to change the contents of the RFP. I mean, I just don't understand what making this change to the agenda is going to do. I think the appropriate thing to do is to leave this item on the agenda as is, discuss what people think needs to change in the RFP and have the full discussion. In other words, I don't think it'll do any good to change the title of this. The RFP is the RFP.
Mr. Langheim?
I would like to concur with
Mike, microphone, please.
I would like to concur with that statement.
Other discussion? Ms. Ammons?
I'll just follow up, and the reason why is because the English language is very unique. And in the words pre-design plan, the assumption is made that we are actually at the phase of planning the building of a jail. And I don't believe that that's where we are, nor does the RFP actually speaks to, in the scope, pre-design plan. It only speaks to gathering data, information, and needs assessment. And I think the title itself misleads the public and make the public believe that there is a already decision to do pre-design plan. So I know it's a semantics, but I think it's a very important semantic, and I think the board should consider if it does not have any actual substantive impact on the scope of the work, then it really shouldn't be objectionable to remove it from this line item.
Mr. Alex?
Yes, I'm not necessarily objecting to changing the title of the RFP. I'm just objecting to changing the agenda when I think the way to change the title, if we're going to do that, is to discuss it later in the context of the existing
agenda. Point of information, the title of the RFP is Needs Assessment Study for Champaign County Corrections.
That's correct. I'm only speaking to the agenda.
This is Mr. Langenheim?
In looking over the document itself, the pre-design planning is for all a number of different alternatives, and I see no objection to having pre-design planning. If you do this, this is what you must do. If you do this, this is what you must do. It means there's no objection to it whatsoever.
Mr. James.
And I would just point out to Carol, it says pre-design planning. It doesn't say pre-design building.
Okay, let's try to move on with the meeting. So all in favor of changing this agenda item, vote
aye.
Aye.
Oppose.
Aye.
Motion fails. Back to the main motion to accept the agenda and the addendum. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Okay, public participation. We have a fairly lengthy pile tonight. Again, we have 1 hour total. 5 minutes is the limit. Nora Stewart, you're up.
Good evening. My name is Nora Stewart. I am the president of ASME Local 900, who represents the employees of Champaign County, your employees. I stand before you once again, asking that you, as members of the Champaign County Board, ask your negotiation team to show the employees of Champaign County that you're willing to show them the respect they deserve by having them return to the negotiating table. We as employees have gone above and beyond by doing everything that you have asked us to do in the past when the county was in a financial turmoil. We took furloughs, wage freezes, cutbacks, and added workloads. We are even willing to pay a portion of our health insurance as you have requested us, even though the county's insurance premiums have went down. We have done everything conceivable to show our willingness to work with your negotiation team. I ask, will you show us the same willingness that we have shown you? Thank you.
Next up is Terry McCauley. Ms. McCauley.
Hi again. I've already said what I wanted to say the last time I spoke with you all at your full board meeting, so what I would like to do is draw your attention. I put in front of you a detailed explanation of the proposals that are on the table right now, and I encourage you to study those, and if you haven't already, the union proposal is very modest. We're hoping that the county board will reconsider what you've got on the table. We're not that far apart. The union would like to resolve this conflict over the wage increases. Thanks.
Ms. Jenny Weishart.
Good evening. My name is Janae Weishart. I work at the State's Attorney's Office, and I'm also the Secretary for Local 900. I'm here to discuss negotiations. We were told by your representative that there was nothing else to negotiate except for what was left on the table, but I'd like to say that's not the case. We still have plenty of room to negotiate. We are hardworking, dedicated workers here, and we have the right to have the respect of you guys to actually go back to your management and tell them to bring us back on the table. It's not over. We weren't too far from what you guys proposed. All we ask is for your consideration and to actually respect us, because we are your workers. We're all on one team. We're all trying to make Champaign County work very efficiently. Thank you.
Dana Craig, please.
Good evening. My name is Dana Craig, and I work in the State's Attorney's Office. I'm just a simple country girl with a Southern upbringing. I was taught to respect others, work hard, and to listen to someone when they're speaking to you, because you just might learn something. Why this matters is why we are here tonight. We are here to ask you, the county board, to listen to what we have to say. Not just hear us, but listen to us. We are asking you to let management know that we still want to negotiate and we want a fair deal. Fair is fair. We work hard until the job is finished. This job is not finished. I think it has been forgotten that we are all on one team. Union, non-union, management and staff, Champaign County. One team, one goal. Fair is fair. We just want to finish this job in negotiations and to have a fair deal. Thank you for listening.
D. Ruggles.
Good evening. Hard to see with that in my face. Good evening. My name is Dee Fairchild Ruggles. I've addressed you in the past. I'm a professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, specifically a professor of architecture and landscape architecture. But I'm not here tonight to discuss the design of the proposed new jail, but rather the design of the committee that is charged with conducting an evaluation of that proposal and the issues that that committee should consider. The board is considering spending something in the order of $20 million of taxpayer monies on the proposed project. Over the past several weeks, you've received feedback from the public, the taxpayers, and by now you are fully aware that the proposed new jail has met with unanimous skepticism and resistance. The criticisms that have been leveled at the project by the community are things like whether a jail is really needed only 32 years after the last one was built, The question of for whom this expensive new facility is intended. People committed for driving offenses, drunkenness, mental illness, illegal immigrants. Is that really $20 million problem in our community? It's a pretty big price tag for a solution of something that doesn't seem all that big. Three, whether there are better, more humane, and less expensive ways of handling local crime. In other words, whether jails are already outmoded and are being replaced, at least elsewhere, by more enlightened forms of ensuring public safety and peace. In other words, are we behind the curve here? I would like to think that we're a progressive community and that we stay ahead of the curve. We're an intelligent community, so we should be leading the way in public safety, not following after it. Fourth, and this is perhaps the most insidious of all, whether the new jail is perhaps conceived with the idea of generating income. Incarcerating undocumented workers is possibly a lucrative way of filling the county's coffers. No one wants to talk about it, and yet I think it lurks at the margins of the decision that you are going to be making. Personally, I have to say I don't want to live in a community that uses poorly paid undocumented workers as a revenue stream. I think it's immoral. A new jail is a complex undertaking, and if it is necessary at all, then it should be done properly. That means allowing sufficient time to collect data and consult widely with the public on their attitudes towards the jail and public safety before voting on the RFP. One of the things that must be addressed is the history of racial inequality. Indeed, I would say racial targeting in our county's justice system. And you've heard and confronted this many, many times. I don't need to give you the specific examples. We should consider measures that would reduce rates of incarceration, and in particular, the racial discrepancy in the jail population in our county. Consistently, more than 60% of those in jail are African American, while only 12% of the general population of the county is African American. That is an important piece of data that should be carefully examined before we even begin to talk about designing a new jail. Thank you.
Mr. William Castro.
Thank you for that. I think my comments will echo. My name is William Castro, and I reside at 306 East Florida Avenue in Urbana, Illinois. 2 weeks ago, I addressed this political body in my capacity as an expert on criminal discourse to propose the creation of a countywide government office to oversee and enforce the cultural training of all police officers in the areas of civil rights, black history and philosophy, Native American systems of law, and migrant histories and sociology as a better, more profitable instrument than jail maintenance and our expansion for reducing crime in our communities. Today, after reading the report to the county board submitted by the sheriff's office on June 14, 2011, and the follow-up report by the National Institute of Corrections in May 2011, I am here to renew and redouble my call for such an office. As an expert, I am here to tell you quite bluntly that after reading these reports, I was quite appalled and dismayed by what I found in them, or rather, by what I did not find in them. At the end of the NIC report, beginning on page 16, we find a set of statistics, diagrams, and charts related to criminal trends in our communities that were submitted to the NIC consultants before their visit. What was dismaying to me as an expert on criminal discourse was the complete negligence on the part of the sheriff's office to provide our visitors with statistics on the racial makeup of the jail population and related statistics on the percentage of those same populations represent vis-a-vis the general population and its racial breakdown. I was even more dismayed at the negligence of the NIC visitors to demand that such statistics be provided to them before their visit so that they will be fully prepared to deal with all significant aspects of crime in our county. How, I ask you, would it be possible for the NIC experts, so-called, to make the proper, unbiased recommendations regarding alternatives to incarceration and jail expansion, a point that they stress repeatedly, when they lack one of the most significant and basic statistics regarding our jail population, namely, who are they and what do they look like? How can they work be thorough if they lack or neglect a basic fact? Without these statistics, which are readily available or should be, as we saw from the previous speaker, how can these experts make a proper or unbiased determination as to what preventive measures to continued mass incarceration, such as investing in culture, might exist out there? Or how would they know what programs are appropriate to our jail population as they try to help them move into productive roles in society and thereby decrease the jail population and the stress on the sheriff's office created by work overload? Let me be clear. The problem of the negligence to provide and or demand race statistics is a profound one that reflects and exemplifies an apparent unwillingness, or what may be worse, an inability to deal with root causes of crime. Moreover, and most importantly, it is a great impediment to imagining, identifying, or dreaming, in the words of our revered Martin Luther King Jr., who stands there in effigy or in representation, to dreaming an alternative and more satisfying, I would even argue more profitable solution to the problem faced by our overall communities, such as crime. Knowing this, we should not be surprised that the recommendations offered by these experts, repairing, maintaining, and expanding the satellite jail, transferring and reproducing the functions of the downtown jail to the satellite jail, and identifying a few programs that are already part of the anti-recidivism strategy, we should not be surprised, I say, that these are the very same strategies of the old, tired, and obsolete system of justice. The problems to which I am alluding are compounded further when we take into account that even though the sheriff's office does provide insight into the problems related to male-female gender division within the jails, the NIC experts did not bother to include a woman in their contingent. Again, these problems seem to reflect an unwillingness, or worse, an inability to deal with the concreteness of the problems created by incarceration strategies amongst our communities and an apparent bias towards reproducing an agenda that is, in fact, and this is a big point, foreign to the interests and realities of our county. These problems are only two of the most significant, detrimental, and damaging to the reports presented by the sheriff's office and the NIC to the county board. There are more, and they will not be fixed by simply including a Black, Latino, Asian, or Native American among the NIC contingent. My conclusion as an expert on criminal discourse, therefore, is that these reports are necessarily misleading, unreliable, and even damaging to our public safety should they be used by the county board, especially in regards to allocation of community funds for specific programs such as the renovation of the satellite. I do, however, recommend that the downtown jail be eliminated and that we work towards depopulating the satellite jail such as it currently stands. Thank you very much.
Amy Foster.
Hi. I'd like to begin by thanking you for listening last month. I do appreciate hearing back from your representatives, the outcome of your meeting. I'm here again to ask one more time that you grant the representatives for the negotiations the authority to resume negotiations with us. You know, I really do hear what you're saying about wanting to give equal percentage raises to both the non-bargaining and the bargaining, and I keep coming back to one thing. It's very difficult to talk about equality when you're using percentages, but you're using those percentages based on pay scales. There are two separate pay scales. I don't know if you're aware of that. There's one set of pay scales for the non-bargaining people and one set for the bargaining people. They overlap only about three-quarters of the way up to the top of the of the bargaining people. So you would have to be, you know, pretty in a three-quarters of the way up the pay grade on bargaining to get to the very bottom of non-bargaining pay scale, although a lot of those jobs are very similar and sometimes overlap. Percentages on a base wage that is so grossly above our base wages make a big difference in a paycheck. I ran the numbers for the average pay scale where it overlaps at the bottom, and with 2%, which is what non-bargaining received, the bottom of their scale was looking at an average of $50 to $60 extra a month on their paycheck, whereas the proposal given to us in a much higher pay grade on ours, not the bottom of our scale, three-quarters of the way up our scale, the proposal given to us came to about $29 to $35 a difference on a paycheck. I don't know about you, but that's not even enough to fill my gas tank right now. And that's in a whole month. Takes more than one tank of gas a month to get here and back. Anyhow, I know that the difficult time it is right now with the rising cost of everything, it's hard on everybody. The county has to watch its budget, and we do too. But those people that are being paid lower right now never had the luxuries to begin with to cut out of their personal budgets. What we have to cut are the necessities, things like food and clothes and, you know, sports for our kids. It's a lot easier to take making those cuts when we don't have to watch other people receiving so much more when we're having the same difficulties. We have been very willing to work with the county on insurance. I know there's a committee that is made up of both bargaining and non-bargaining people, and I know they worked very hard to get the county lower premiums this year on insurance, and yet we're being asked, and even in our last proposal, willing to pay some towards the insurance, although the premiums went down. I would think maybe some savings there would have allowed you to grant the extra authority. We're very close together. It's not a lot of extra authority that we're asking you to grant your representatives. Just enough to come back to the table and finish the negotiations that were started last year. We would all love to start to receive some of the benefit of the new contract. I believe we're really close together on our proposals, and I think that we could settle this very soon if you could just think about what I've said, review the numbers, and grant your representatives the authority they need to come back to the table. Thank you.
Ms. Sarah Lazare. Ms. Sarah Lazare.
Hi, I'm Sarah Lazare, and I live at 412 West Illinois Street in Urbana. I'm here today representing the GEO, AFT-IFT Local 6300. And I want to talk about the proposed expansion of the county jail. But before I do that, as a union member, I also just want to say that today, before this county board meeting, I walked the picket line with workers from AFSCME Local 900. And I think it's really important to point out that these workers are asking for fair wages from the county board. I think it is irresponsible and unfair that the county board is looking at spending $20 million on the jail expansion. That's $20 million.
Order, please.
That's $20 million for incarceration, for locking people up, but it's failing to pay decent wages and fair wages to the workers who make this county work. So I just wanted to point out that I think there's something really wrong with our county when it'll spend money to lock people up, but not money for them to financially survive. Okay, so first of all, I want to talk about the issue that the Illinois Department of Corrections, which is in charge of making sure that jails meet standards, actually passed our county jails with no indication that these jails violate their standards. Now, I'm not here to uphold the standards of the Illinois Department of Corrections. I think a lot of people in this room would disagree with the way the Illinois Department of Corrections believes that some human beings should be treated. So I'm not here to uphold their standards. But I do want to suggest that the sheriff and his allies and the folks pushing this expansion forward are creating a false emergency and then using this false emergency to rush through a costly jail expansion process. I think it's really, really problematic to be creating a false emergency because it's politically expedient. The county jail expansion effort is not just a building issue. We need to look at the criminal justice system in its entirety and assess how this proposed expansion would affect that criminal justice system overall. I urge our county board not to hurry or rush this through. This is a long, slow process, and it must be connected to an overall understanding of the criminal justice system and how it works and how this proposed expansion would work. Remember back when the county board wanted to skip the needs assessment and go straight to estimates? I urge you not to rush this process through. It is very important for you to listen to the concerns of your constituents who fear that it would be a mistake to put more money into incarceration, to put $20 million more into incarceration, instead of creating the services and infrastructure that can prevent people from being locked up in the first place and provide alternatives. Thank you.
Ms. Kelly Diller, please. Kelly Diller.
Hello, my name's Kelly Dillard. I reside at 700 County Road East in Champaign County. You all have on your agenda the first thing up tonight is a proposed amendment to County Rural Home Occupancy Ordinance 7.12. It affects small business in Champaign County and it has been being made to stifle growth in our county. This is no small text amendment. It is far-reaching and crippling to many businesses in Champaign County at a time when we need less regulation instead of more. The existing ordinance only regulates second division trucks. Mr. Hall wants to regulate trucks, cars, construction equipment, signage, and weight per the proposed amendment. Regulation 7.12E is very clear that it only regulates second division vehicles. On the second page, he states there's no weight limits in the existing ordinance. It does not need a weight limit. This is not John Hall's job. Weight limits are regulated by each road authority. On page 2, item 3, he says there's no limit on equipment when, in fact, it is limited in paragraph 4 and 6 of his amendment to 3 over 15,000 pounds and 10 total, including those stored indoor. Why does anybody care what I store indoor or in a screened area? Amendment 7.12E, item 3, limits semi-trucks and trailers to 1. The current ordinance limits only the truck portion to 3. The amendment says that RHOs can't park any motor vehicles within 50 feet of a lot line. If it's screened, it shouldn't matter. Item 2 in the amendment, 7.12D, is very restrictive for equipment or vehicles of any kind that might have a company name or logo on it. In the current ordinance in question, 7.12E, as written, is very clear that it only applies to non-farm second division vehicles. There is no reason to change this ordinance. John Hall's job is to be a servant of the people, using our planning and zoning laws to attract and grow business in an organized way in our county. Instead, he uses it to stifle business with bureaucratic red tape every chance he gets. John Hall has admitted, and I have shown, that time after time the zoning department has misconstrued, misquoted, and changed the ordinance to fit their own desire instead of enforcing what the county board directed him to do. John Hall has not had to answer to this board for the inappropriate use of handouts and forms that refer to commercial vehicles instead of second division vehicles, as the ordinance calls for, or for his misquoting the ordinance in citations issued to me, or for his inability to clear up the over 400 cases that he has now. Yet he comes to this board asking for more regulations. John Hall has willfully and with malice misinterpreted the ordinance and failed to act in good faith with the public. I'm asking three things from this board. Instruct the zoning department to enforce the code as written by the county board and correct the handouts and forms. Not to grant John Hall's proposed amendment, as it is very detrimental to our county. I would also like you to launch an investigation into the zoning department's misuse of the zoning codes. Thank you.
Patsy Howell, please.
What was the name?
Patsy Howell.
Hi.
Here I am again. Patsy Howell, 117 North Broadway, downtown Urbana. Well, last time I came and we talked about letting the public know what was happening with this $20 million. We talked about a referendum or some way that the public would have input. Is this something they want for their county? So I understand that there's going to be a committee to assess need. But yet that committee, nothing was mentioned in that assessment about, like other people have said, the population. The population all over the country, books are being written, you know, documentaries are being done. Everyone is becoming more and more aware that it's African Americans that's making up the prison population. That is something that is not a small fact that you can ignore when you talk about building a jail. But there's other needs. Obviously, I didn't know when I come in here tonight, I don't know any of these women. But I can tell by looking at them and listening to them, they're hardworking women, family women, that need more money for pushing your papers and for doing your dirty work. So that's just one sector, one place that's crying out, we need a fair wage. It's always ironic that the bosses on this side, the opposition to humane jailings on this side, it always falls correctly. The other thing is the mentally ill. I think I mentioned the last time I was here, I was in jail for a while, and while I was there, a brief period of time, they were passing out meds, hollering out to cell members that were screaming that they had calls into the mental health department, carried a very, very old lady out on a bed, a hospital bed. These were the things I seen with my eyes. Okay, so I felt like I was in an institution, a mental institution, and not a jail. A young man was rocking back and forth in the cell. This is the norm. This isn't like something that doesn't happen. So an assessment committee has to look at all these things. I think we all know about the three little pigs that have to puff the wolf. That's a fairy tale. Okay? That's a fairy tale. Build your house real strong so the wolf won't build it, you know, blow it over. This is a children's fairy tale. And we are not children, and we need an assessment that deals with what's inside that house. And we also need an assessment and a look, you know, not with a Ouija board, but a real look of trends, who's going to be jailed in that $20 million jail. Are you not going to be able to keep it up as a county and sell it to a business that then, for a business, wants to keep them beds? You know, your kids may end up in there, okay? Because they will keep the profit up. I think there's a lot of things to look at. And I think you're probably nice people. I'm sure many of you are. I know a couple of you are, but I don't know about the rest of you. But I think that you're not capable at this point without input to pick a committee that's going to discuss these things. I think that you're probably naive. Can I see hands of anybody that's been in jail?
No interaction between speakers.
Oh, that's right. No hands. Okay. Well, I don't think I'd get any hands anyway. So, but I don't think you've been in jail. I think many of you don't even know people that's been in jail or mentally ill or have had to deal with that whole thing. You're here because the public felt that you were capable not of deciding these issues, but finding the right people that could decide that. And I hope that you take that seriously. Because we don't need a $20 million jail. We need our youth to have programs. We need... Our kids don't even have school books, textbooks, some of them. They're bringing home Xerox copies. They don't have books. You know, we have a couple of lovely facilities. This weekend I was at the Y, the new Y. Beautiful facility. It has positive things it gives to the community. Our library in Champaign, beautiful facility. Positive things it gives to the community.
Right, that's right, ma'am.
Jail. Not positive.
Chris Evans, please. Chris Evans.
Chris Evans, Champaign County resident, District 8. And I accept the criticism that I may be 9 years too late here, but it's such a Mr. Smith goes to Washington moment, it bears worth repeating. In 1998, the voters of Champaign County were presented the following. Ordinance 572, and this was approved by the voters November 3rd, 1998. Quote, "Now therefore be it further resolved that upon payment in full of the cost of the construction of new facilities for the Champaign County Youth Detention Center and Champaign County Courthouse and the repayment in full of the outstanding obligations on the existing bonds issued to fund construction of the satellite county jail, this tax shall be repealed unless the tax's continuation is approved by a majority of the voters of Champaign County in a subsequent election." That's what the voters voted for in 1998. What do those words mean? What part of "this tax shall be repealed" is not understood? What part of "unless the tax continuation is approved by a majority of the voters in a subsequent election" is not understood? If I give you a contract to sign, and you look it over, and I say, "I'm going to offer you this amount of services, and you're going to pay this amount of money," and you sign it and say, "That's good, I'll sign it," and I take that contract and I say, and I erase the terms of the contract and change it to more money, more services that you didn't sign for, I think you'd want Sheriff Welch to escort me to one of those cells that you're fixing to build. And if I bilked you out of $8 million of your money that you didn't expect, I think I'd be charged with a felony. You couldn't write this stuff. The very thieves that have stolen $8 million from the taxpayers is the same body who wants to build a $20 million jail, maximum security jail expansion. Will you put yourselves in it?
And where are you Republicans now? You're supposed to be the party of less taxing and less spending, but it's okay to trick the voters out of $4 million a year and send the grandkids into debt till 2029? An excerpt from the crooked Ordinance 683 that was approved April 10th, 2003, speaking of obeying the law. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the Champaign County Board will use any revenue generated by the quarter cent sales tax as follows: to pay the annual maintenance costs of the Champaign County Correction and Detention Facilities. Will Wright should say that. You want to talk about mandates coming on high from the state? Look at Chapter 55 of the Illinois State Statutes. Article 5, Section 5-1106, under the heading County Offices, Equipment, and Expenditures, it says, it shall be the duty of the county board of each county first to erect and keep in repair a suitable jail. You were supposed to maintain that jail for the last 10 years. What happened? Consultants from the Department of Justice's National Institute of Corrections goes to inspect, and they call the conditions deplorable and depressing. They cite five negative conditions. It's deplorable. It's debilitated operational systems, limited artificial and natural light, dingy colors, disparate gender treatment of men and women. Special needs inmates are not being taken care of, and there's no programs for the female inmates in the downtown jail. The county board, the consultants recommended you close this jail this year, and that you put the low medium offenders into a dormitory, and you move everybody out to the satellite. Your own facilities director says it. Alan Reinhart says that there's 1.5 to 1.8 million in capital improvements over at that downtown jail, and you're mandated by law to maintain that jail. Unbelievable. In fact, the state's attorney even says that you're in jeopardy of getting sued with that downtown jail. She's quoted in a newspaper saying that they're very, quote, very concerned about someone suing the county, particularly with regard to the disparate treatment between female inmates and male inmates. This is the big concern that they address with us. You were made by your own ordinance from the 683, you were supposed to maintain that jail. But you didn't do it. So the first $1.8 million ought to go to fixing that jail. But wait, what's this I read? Filed last year, August 16, 2011, criminal justice specialist Brad Benson, on behalf of the Illinois Department of Corrections, where Inspector Benson judged the county over a checklist of 250 items, found zero non-compliances to Illinois County Jail standards. According to the Illinois Department of Corrections, there's nothing wrong with that county jail. Is any of this making sense yet?
Mr. Evans, your 5 minutes are up.
In conclusion, I'll say this. You ought to, for $20 million, you ought to give it to the people that have to pay for it and let them vote on it. Make this a county-wide referendum.
Mr. Jeremy Bomberger. Jeremy Bomberger, please.
Good evening. My name is Jeremy Bamberger. I live in District 9, making my representatives Mr. Chris Alex, Mr. McGinty, and the you're sitting in the other guy's seat. All right, okay. So I would like to reiterate for the third meeting in a row my concern with the influence that the jail space improvement project planning team constituted by this committee a month ago today has continued to have over the board's decisions on how to proceed with the rectification of the conditions at the downtown jail. I would like to reiterate further that there is no provision anywhere in the county board rules which gives a deputy chairperson the power to unilaterally appoint any kind of group to work on any kind of issue, and that the current project planning team was not approved by a specific vote by this board. Just for your information, the project planning team is currently composed of Dan Walsh, County Sheriff, Alan Reinhart, County Facilities Director, Deb Busey, County Administrator, Tom Betts, Deputy Chair of Facilities Committee, John Jay, Assistant Deputy Chair of Facilities Committee, and two as yet anonymous designees. one from the state's attorney's office, and one appointed by Judge Stefanis. There is no existing public record of any meetings they have had. The latest abuses of power that I would like to bring to your attention tonight are in your agenda packet for this meeting. In this latest RFP, the individuals I just mentioned have inserted themselves in the board's decision-making process twice, once before the proposals even reach the board for consideration, and once after the consultant has drawn his or her conclusions. Section 5, it's in your packets, of this RFP is entitled Selection Process, and it begins, "The members of the jail project planning team will review the proposals and submit recommendations to the county board. Depending on the response to the RFP, the jail project planning team may elect to shortlist two or three firms that best meet the selection criteria and schedule those firms for interviews with the county board." On the first page of the RFP, you can see that the proposals will be sent to the sheriff's office, and according to Section 5, they will then be reviewed not by the Champaign County Board, but by the project planning team. According to this document, this board will be voting on recommendations handpicked by the project planning team, whose members have time and again made their preference for specific courses of actions clear at these meetings. You will not have direct access to the full range of applicants if you approve this document as written, and I believe that this is a bold circumvention of the county board's authority in this matter. Similar is the intervention the project planning team has designed for itself in Section 8, entitled Communication Reports and Presentations. The third paragraph reads, "A rough draft of the final report should be submitted for review by the jail project planning team. After the comments have been returned by the county, the report should be finalized." Now, that whole communication section is a travesty, and I hope y'all will look it over closely. But for now, I'd just like to point out that the first group of people who get to see the final report is the project planning team. Not the county board, not the stakeholders outside of those included in the team, and certainly not the public. Just like it gave itself the power to preview and handpick applicants for consultant services, the project planning team has given itself the role of gatekeeper, previewing information, returning its comments on behalf of the county, and only after that, presenting a summary to the county board in open session. I'm going to say this very plainly. There needs to be a check on the power of the project planning team. You can go to cucpj.org/silenced and read the statement that I would have liked to present to you last meeting, in which, at the end, there are three possible ways to make that team more accountable. I'd also like to point out that tonight, the board members who last month expressed concern over the composition of the facilities team now have a chance to make a motion to with which you could change the structure of that team, either by altering the membership as board members Carter, Ammons, Berkson, and Alex, and Petrie mentioned wanting to do, or by instituting a more collaborative relationship between the planning team and the task force, which is what my representative, Chris Alex, said was the appropriate course of action on February 14th during the discussion of the role of the task force.
Your 5 minutes are almost up. Your 5 minutes are up. Rachel Schwartz, please.
Hi, I'm Rachel Schwartz. I'm a candidate for County Board District 7. I want to talk about the jail, but I'm interested in the financial aspect. Not that the other ones are not important, but that's the angle I'm coming from. Two things. One is the funding of the jail. The rhetoric I've heard from some county board members that by 2015, the bonds of the courthouse expansions will be paid off, and therefore we'll have money to pay from the quarter cent tax for the expansion. A few weeks ago, some board members asked for a funding model. On February 7th, there was a funding model, but it never got discussed because the meeting went really late. The minutes said it should be on today's agenda, but it's not, so I want to raise it anyway. The first page on that model that you probably don't have now says that right now we have current bonds that have debt services that obligates public safety sales tax until 2029. Nothing is expiring. Maybe some things are expiring, but not the whole thing. The other point is that there are two models there. One is for $15 million and one for $20 million. I don't have a clue of how much this jail will cost, but the two models that are given are $15 million and $20 million. In both cases, it seems like there is enough revenue from this public safety sales tax, but it will be taking more of that revenue. My understanding is that last week you voted to abate some property taxes because we have money left over from the sales tax. Now, I might be wrong about it, and the county administrator could clarify, but it seems to be like there would be less money left to abate property taxes, and so even though you're not going to vote to raise taxes to fund this, there will be less dollars from the sales tax to abate property taxes. So de facto, you will be raising property taxes to pay for that. So that's one concern. The second one is probably not as big, but still I would like to talk about a small or significant inconsistency in the RFP. Page 7, the project planning team is going to be able to select a short list of 2 to 3 firms that best meet the selection criteria. The selection criteria will be weighted with 45% methodology, 40% qualifications, and 15% cost. However, if you go to page 15 of that RFP, it says that the budget proposals should be submitted in a separate sealed envelope, and only those of the top 2 to 3 or 2 firms will be identified. And my question is, how would you, if 15% of the selection criteria is based on cost, but we're not going to open any envelope talking about cost until after the top 2 firms have been identified, how does that work? Thank you.
Ron Custer, please.
My name is Ron Custer. I live in an apartment at 1205 East Florida in Urbana. And I thank you for considering my statement this evening about the jailing function in Champaign County. Since 2010, I have worked as a volunteer tutor in the Champaign County Satellite Jail Facility. I work with students who are studying to take the GED exam. GED stands for General Educational Development. It's what students earn when, for one reason or another, they are unable to graduate from high school with their peers. Currently, many more inmates at the satellite jail request enrollment in the GED program than space allows. Men are routinely turned away for lack of resources. Let me share 2 observations about the program. First, the program allows the men to try out new decisions about their lives, to become the kind of people who take school seriously, who demonstrate discipline and concentration, who voluntarily help others, and who plan for the future. This might not fit the convict stereotype that some of us have, but then the GED classroom might be among the first places these men have ever felt cared about and respected. They respond by demonstrating who they want to be. The second observation is about the students' concerns. At the beginning and end of class, the men have a chance to ask questions unrelated to the subject matter. Many of the questions are about the GED exam, when they can take the test. It isn't offered in the jail anymore. How much it costs. They often don't have the $50 for the testing fee. And how to enroll in a mainstream education program. Many have been away from school longer than they were ever in school. Other questions are unrelated to the GED. How to apply for a job, how to refill their medication, what homeless shelters are available. We already know from statistics that more than 2/3 of the jail population in Champaign County are there for nonviolent offenses. No violence to people, no violence to property. This is very good news because it means we are in a position to provide help to a lot of people who are there. We can help them with their substance abuse issues, their educational needs, their employment and housing problems, their mental illness. Within the jail system, we need to include these ways to help. Just as important, we can create a program that supports them outside of the jail with constructive solutions, substance abuse support groups, adult education programs, job placement, medical care, and sustainable lifestyles. This bridge between the cell block and civilian life is a crucial aspect of the jailing function. Study after study demonstrates that it is key to a long-term reduction in recidivism. It is the key. That's the way it works. This new point of view regarding the jailing function as the first step in a process of reclamation, one that makes the community safer, that saves the county money, and that promotes constructive action among those who really need it. Just as the men in the satellite jail strive to present the best version of themselves in class, we should represent the best aspirations of the county by making the jail a site of positive change. I know how difficult this point of view is for some of you to share with the people you represent. I grew up in Effingham, a community without much racial or ethnic diversity, and it was common to hear people repeat stereotypes and cast their fears in terms of race. These fears depicted people of color as criminals and the jailing function as the solution. I bet many of you know people who still think this way. Even as we reject such an opinion as naive and uninformed, often we still fall victim to the thinking behind it, the us versus them mentality that portrays some people as good and other people as bad. The more insecure we feel about our community, the more willing we are to use the jailing function as a means to separate a population of bad people from the rest of us. We need to leave behind this attitude as well. Imagine if our resources were focused on preventing recidivism by offering the GED exam to those in jail and addressing the long-term needs of those exiting the jail. Imagine if our resources were used to identify more of the needs of our citizens before crimes were committed. Would we have a better jail system? I think we would. A better community, too. Tonight, I ask you to be educators for your neighbors, not just about the complex decision you will be making, but about what we want our county to be like for the next generation. Let's use existing resources to remake the jailing function to represent our determination to help the marginalized and the dispossessed. It's not an easy lesson to teach, but I can't imagine one more important. Thank you.
Mr. Aaron Evans. Aaron Evans.
Aaron Evans, good evening, everyone. I want to first let AFSCME know that SEIU stands with AFSCME, with unions across the country, for fair wages, for living wages, and for the support and respect that you deserve. We stand with you, and as the vice president of the Local 119, I think I have the authority to stand on that and speak on that publicly. We stand with AFSCME workers and other union workers across this country, especially in Champaign County. So I open up my SEIU jacket and put on my Malcolm X shirt. As I read through the RFP, so far what I see, I just have a few questions. And I was wondering, when it says that the consultant should describe, this is page 12, I believe, at the top, it says communications, reports, and presentations. What it says, the consultant should describe in the proposal how he or she will communicate with the county and the public about the jail planning study. Again, later on in that same top paragraph, it says that the consultant should also seek the preferences of the county. So I'm seeing the word county be used a couple of times here, but it doesn't specify if the county is the project facilities jail committee team. Is it the county board? Is it the county, like public meetings will be held where all of citizens who are concerned could come out and be a part of that? So I would like for some clarity to be offered in regards to that. And then it says preferences of the county. So is that preferences of the jail facilities committee? Is that preferences of the Justice and Social Service Task Force? Or is that the preferences of the county board? That would be helpful if we had some clarity on that. And I'm also noting that the when you continue in that paragraph, it says that the consultant should also seek the preferences of the county about how to structure public communication and obtain input of stakeholders to help develop specifics about contents of the communication. How to structure public communication. Well, the National Institute of Corrections says that it recommends that public participation be available and be a part of all aspects of the development of a proposal. So I don't understand why we would be confused about what the public communication should be and how it should be structured. And so that leads me to the facilities. What is it, a project team? It's not a committee because it wasn't actually appointed, so it's something. I don't know exactly what it is. But it has no people of color on it, but as the one expert and then another expert came up behind and said that how are you going to develop a program or a jail that primarily houses people of color but refuse to receive on a regular basis the input of anyone of color. So I would ask, why hasn't the committee, it's a team of people that volunteer to serve, why isn't that team of people open to someone like myself or someone else in the community of color who would like to be a part of that so that their input would be considered as well? But the real issue for me is, why do we cringe? I've been observing the room and a couple of people, I won't call no names tonight, who are cringing every time you hear 15, 20 million. You're just like, oh, somebody doesn't know what they're talking about. Well, why don't you have more public meetings where you actually share accurate information and not squeeze people into 5 minutes and then you 5 minutes are almost up. You know, that kind of thing. You know, why don't you come to the public, say, hey, the county board is having a public meeting where we want you all to come, and the project team and the justice and social service team are going to present information and answer all your questions. And then people won't have to keep throwing out figures that make you cringe and stuff like that.
Aaron, you have 1 minute left.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I would also add that when we look at towards the end of this area, this page 12 again, right here at the bottom part of communications reports and presentations, it says after submission of the final report, the county board will contact the consultant to establish a time when a summary presentation will be made to the board in open session. I would like that we would add something like that. The research and conclusions and recommendations included in the report will be made public and placed in the record on the county board website. So those are just a couple of recommendations that I would have about the proposal that we've seen. And I really, really appreciate what Chris Evans said a little while ago, because I know we're dealing with the back end of something, but I was wondering if the county board could usurp the voters and manipulate the voters. And from what they decided to do in 1998 to change that in 2003, because it was very clear the language that you would have to go back to the voters to change it. If you have the power to manipulate the voters and change it in 2003, then why couldn't there be a motion made here and say, well, listen, you know, that was wrong. So I'd like to see some upstanding, maybe my wife would make the motion, to say, I would like to make a motion that this county board rescind or revoke what they did in 2003 because it was a violation of the public trust, and take this whole piece back to the voters again and let's restructure the public sales tax and see what happens then. I think that would be an honorable and stand-up thing for elected officials to do in this capacity, since you have been so clearly educated by Mr. Evans about how it was immoral, if not illegal, certainly immoral and unethical to manipulate us the way that you did in 2003. Thank you for your time.
Is there any other public commentary? Seeing none, let's go on to communications from the board. Ms. Ammons.
I just wanted to, I know Mr. Alex asked for this last time for the public. If you have comments that you shared with the board, if you would please send them to the county administrator's office to be added to the record officially. Thank you.
Ms. Petrie.
Chair Weibel, I have two supportive comments that were sent to me by email for the local food policy.
You should enter them in the record. That's timely to discuss that.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Alex.
I wanted to reiterate what Ms. Ammons said and thank her for pointing this out to me the other night, that my comments may have been misconstrued. When I said we'd like to get comments in writing, I wasn't meaning stop coming and talking to us. I meant if you can also provide comments in writing, that would be great, because it helps us, especially if we get them before the meeting, we have time to think about it before we might be able to take action on them. Thank you.
Are there any other communications from the board? Okay, let's move on to environment and land use. Mr. Kurtz.
Evening. I'd like to start with the first motion, the direction to zoning administrator regarding proposed zoning ordinance, text ordinance amendment to amend limits on vehicles and equipment in the rural home occupation. I'd like a motion. Mr. Rangenheim first, second, Mr. Weibel. Thank you. Discussion, Mr. Weibel.
Yeah, hold on a second until I find the right page here.
Thank you. Let me get my pen.
I'd like to make a motion to amend the main motion on page 45 of the agenda under item 1E where it says non-farm. I'd like to include farm vehicles, so we change non-farm to farm. What's the best way to do it, John?
I think we had talked about adding non-farm, retaining non-farm in the ordinance. Add it back to the amendment.
So we want
non-farm.
Non-farm. That's right. So we just delete the cross out there.
Exactly.
So for the whole sentence.
No, just for the phrase non-farm.
For non-farm, we're going to delete the line out, so it will be back in the motion.
Second on that motion, please. Second by Astrid. Discussion.
Where?
Page 45.
Page 45. Chris.
Page 45 of the agenda.
Exactly. Where are you referring, please?
Where is it, John? Non-farm. E1E at the top of the page. On page 45.
I'm sorry, we've got multiple copies of the ordinance in here.
Oh. Sorry.
The one from the ZBA here I was looking at.
The other 45.
Okay.
Thank you. And could I hear the motion again?
Remove the cross out from non-farm.
Add non-farm back in.
So non-farm will be back into it.
Okay. Is there any discussion on? We have a second from Astrid on that motion by Pius. Do I have any discussion on that motion, Mr. Maxwell?
As I understand this motion,
microphone, please, Mr. Maxwell. That's okay.
As I understand the motion, all it does is just strike the portion that strikes through non-farm and leaves non-farm in.
That's correct.
So second division would still be, we're not dealing with that yet. With just those two words, so we're dealing with this motion.
That's correct on this motion.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any other comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carried. So we're going to remove the strikeout and add in non-farm. Back to the main motion. I have discussion, I'll go with Mr. J first, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a lot of concerns with what's happened in this particular case, and I have a lot of concerns with the proposed changes. I'm not sure about why some of these changes are made. Some of them doesn't make any sense at all. I'd like to defer this to the June Facilities Committee meeting.
Are you making a motion on that to defer?
Yes, please.
Second.
I have a second by Ms. Holifield. Do I have discussion on deferral? Carol.
Yes, I'd like to ask Mr. Jay if he could share why he would like to defer it that far out for some reason.
Mr. Jay, you're recognized to respond.
Thank you, Carol. First of all, I don't see any great immediacy that this has to be done at this particular point in time. We've drugged this on way too long to start with, but there's just a lot of questions that I have. For instance, I still don't understand what this meaning of how many pounds a vehicle is. I don't have a clue what that has to do with the zoning ordinance. I don't have a clue what it has to do with how many people you can have on your property at one time. I think this needs a thorough review before we jump off the cliff. We need to see how deep the water is.
All right. Any other discussion on the defer? Mr. Schroeder.
Thank you. I think for clarification, you said facilities committee. I think you meant ELUC committee.
Yes. Mr. James. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Yeah. Just for clarification.
Thank you, Mr. Schroeder, for the correction. Do I have any other discussion? Carol.
I do understand Mr. Jay's point that it really needs a lot more vetting, but the question is, for me, is procedural. This is the committee of the whole, which is where we actually supposed to do this work at. I'm trying to determine why we would move it to another committee of the whole if this is the committee of the whole.
Mr. Jay.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to be able to present you with a full list of concerns instead of a haphazard one. I don't have my homework done tonight.
All right. Mr. Jay will have us a detailed report on his concerns on this motion. Mr. James and then Mr. Allen.
I'm going to have to concur with Mr. Jay because I've been reading this, and it goes into lawnmowers, riding lawnmowers, and all that stuff, and I know I have four or five at home, and then if I start counting my vehicles, I'm going to be in violation of county code, which I don't need a big group yelling at me.
That might be a first.
Mr. Alex.
I agree. I mean, there's two things I could do tonight, either vote for deferral or vote no, and if I were, and I think it would be more responsible of me as a board member to vote for deferral and have some more time to look at this and to talk about it. I guess I didn't do my homework either, but it's tough when the assignment keeps changing every meeting. I think Mr. Dillard made a number of useful comments. I mean, for example, the thing that jumped out at me was the issue of signage, right? I mean, if we're basically saying that any vehicle that has a sign identifying a business on it is restricted.
I understand, Chris, but we've got issues here.
I'll come back to it.
Thank you.
There are a number of things I have concerns about here. I won't go into all of them, but I agree that this thing needs some more work.
Okay. So,
thank you.
All right. I do want to say one thing. We have deferred this one time. All right. And we were asked by Mr. Hall to send him recommendations. We waited a month. Did we get any recommendations, John?
I got recommendations from Mr. Maxwell, Ms. Petrie, and yourself.
Thank you. And that's all. I would appreciate it if there is a concern about this change in the ordinance that we have a little bit more than just three of our 27 members making recommendations. If we're going to defer it again and three more people are going to ask John, are we going to go back to the same thing next committee of the whole? So I'm asking that if we're going to defer this, that we make sure that we give Mr. Hall some direction on this so that we can have an ordinance here that you can vote on and not defer every month. All right? Ms. Michaels, then Ms. Petrie, and then Ms. Astrid Ferguson.
I agree with the gentleman and Mr. Alex, too, as opposed to just plain voting no on this, to try to give Mr. Hall a little bit of... a little bit of help, maybe, if you will. And I know that's kind of surprising coming from me, since I was pretty strong about this the last time we all met, that I definitely think this needs to be deferred. There's a lot of other things that have been added to this or struck through that maybe weren't there before, or maybe we need to look at again versus voting no.
Ms. Petrie.
Thank you very much. I know this is about on the edge of this motion for deferment. I do agree with that. I did send comments, but in the course of further discussion, in the spirit of giving Mr. Hall some direction, I mentioned this at caucus, and I'm always for simplifying ordinances, and I asked him the question of why do we have all these different ways and things? Why don't we just merely go 80,000 pounds, that's the road limit, and if it's screened or within a building, that takes care of it.
All right, Ms. Petrie, again, we're talking about deferring. We can get all those suggestions once again to Mr. Hall so we can put it in the ordinance for the next committee of the whole. I have Ms. Berkson first, and then I have Ms. Holderfield. Microphone, please, Astrid.
This is rural home occupation. And, you know, suppose you had a lovely home out there and this excavating company moved next to you. You would care how many 80,000-pound vehicles they had and how much noise they made. Your life would get very hard being next to you.
All right.
Regarding, thank you.
Ms. Holderfield, and
Mr.
then
Chair,
let's vote on this deferral.
Deferment.
Discussion will come when we have the actual main motion on this item. Please, we're talking about deferral right now. Please stay on subject. Thank you.
Thank you. Regarding deferment, I would like very much for to have a little bit more time because I had not really gone through and completely. I can't really understand how all of these are strikeouts are going to affect the future. There was a grandfathering in for Mr. Dillard, yet in the future there will be changes, and if someone else comes along later on, one person's grandfathered in, and yet we don't have really a complete that I'm satisfied with ordinance here. So I think it's imperative on all of us to make sure that when we do this, it's done correctly, and I definitely will shed more light on what I think is important. But we have to remember that a part of that, the purpose for deferment is that our townships are the one that also have the opportunity and availability to change those weight limits through their discretion. So we have to remember townships are a part of this. And I think that needs to also be added to this language, so I'd like deferment.
Thank you. Mr. Stanjan.
In all honesty, because I like to be an honest politician, I have to ask to defer it because I've been so busy with the jail issue, I haven't had time to really read it. Thank you.
Mr. Carter.
I'd like to know whose idea this was for these changes in the first place.
Yeah, this comes out of the planning and Lloyd. This comes out of the planning and zoning department. We're trying to update this ordinance so that we're protecting our farmers out there from overloading specific areas with more equipment. It comes out of the planning and zoning department.
But was a notice sent out to all the rural homeowners that this effect of these changes?
I know. Lloyd, let's see if we're going to defer this. I'll answer your question after so that we can get this thing moving forward, and the motion is to defer right now. We're trying to see if we're going to defer this to next month. And then, what's that?
To June.
Okay? And I'll discuss this with you right after personally. Thank you. Jan, and then Mr. Short.
Well, I was ready to vote for it tonight. I guess that I could support referral if we don't keep doing
I'm
that.
I'm going to ask.
Because it seems like Mr. Dillard, it was handled very well. He has gotten his permit, but it was the vague wording that made it difficult to get to that place. And I heard Mr. Hall saying that we need, and reading the minutes of the ZBA very quickly, but it looks like there was lots of discussion there. They are people who have background in dealing with these kinds of zoning, and I take it that most of this came out of there. So if we do defer, I hope that we can do it the next time so that when another case may not come up for a long time, but if it does, we'll have something to deal with it a little more quickly.
Thank you, Jan. John?
Thanks. Real quick, just to emphasize, I agree with Jan. I came here to vote for it. I think we drug this along enough, but it sounds like it's either going to get defeated or deferred, so I'm probably going to vote deferred. And the testimony we heard tonight made it sound like there's nothing that can go on in the county out there. It's ridiculous. There's special uses, there's variances, and there's zoning changes out there. This is bare minimum to what we're doing out there for a commercial or a very small commercial operation. It's to keep a lid on. If you want to do anything else, you can rezone or variance. So I'm going to have to defer or we're going to lose it.
Thank you, John. Jeff?
I was actually going to call the question of the motion to defer.
Okay. I'd like to say one thing before we vote. I really don't want to recognize another deferral in June. I would really like to see us all make the proper suggestions to Mr. Hall so that we can move this thing forward and have a consensus of this board on this motion. So, with that said, I'm calling for a vote. All in favor of deferral, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Okay, B. Direction to zoning administrator regarding proposed zoning ordinance text amendment to modify wind farm separation from CR district. Have a motion, please.
So moved.
Mr. James.
Yes.
Second. Mr. Carter. Discussion. Mr. James.
John, can you tell us why you think this is needed in a nutshell?
Well, Mr. Michael Jarbo is a landowner whose land was affected by a small isolated part of the CR district in the recent wind farm case. That part of the CR district is only 32 acres in area. It has none of the natural features that the CR district is supposed to have, and yet it still gets the benefit of a one-mile separation. And for that reason, almost 18% of the California Ridge wind farm area could not have wind turbines because of this 32 acres of the CR district. And so Mr. Jarbo asked if something could be done. Some board members asked me. I believe that this is not like the rest of the CR district, and the board could choose to add this small amendment. And no, we have no inquiries right now about a wind farm, but we do know that it would absolutely open up 18% of that area for more turbines.
Thank you.
Mr. Langenheim.
I'd just like something verified. Is it true that the features in that piece of land that led to it being placed in the CR district have been obliterated, and that if we were looking at it today, we would be very unlikely to put that in a CR district?
That's what I believe.
Okay. Jeff, did you have your hand up? I'm sorry.
Yes, I did.
You get sort of hidden behind. If you move to the left a little bit. So
I like to hide, that's
Mr.
all.
Mr. Rosales is sort of blocking you out there.
That's what he's paid to do. Thank you, Mr. Hall. Can you briefly describe and discuss where the one-mile separation actually originated from with respect to, is this coming from some, when this was originally done a few years back, was this from some main source that we were just pulling from and just came in, or was this coming from public input and drove it through the county board?
Well, it was proposed in a public hearing. The one-mile separation was based on the fact that with wind farms, we have concerns about bird and bat fatalities. Birds and bats live in the CR district. That's one reason why there's the CR district, is to protect the environment. So it seemed to be a contradiction to put wind farms in the CR district. The CR district is also the principal rural residential district. It's where most folks live that live out in the rural areas. And a lot of those folks testified at the public hearing that they didn't want to see wind turbines come up to the CR district, and they actually supported the one-mile separation. Many people wanted a greater separation. So that's sort of the background, if that answered your question.
Thank you.
There was Mr. Bensel first, please.
Excuse me. Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to confirm for Mr. Langenheim, that is true. This piece of ground originally had, if I was to guess, maybe 30 to 40% of that ground originally had timber on it, some trees on it. The rest was tillable acres at that time. Now, all of that has been removed. The ditch that runs through that ground actually has been rerouted and some of it taken out. The only thing that could possibly look like conservation area at this point is some small portion of grassy area where that ditch used to be. So there's really nothing there but farm ground at this point.
Thank you for that explanation, Mr. Bensel. Ms. Petrie? No. Okay. Ms. Ammons?
I just wanted to ask a quick question about designations. When you designate something a conservation area, like CR, is that what CR district is?
It's a zoning district only.
That's a zoning district only.
Yes.
Okay. And under that definition of CR district, can you give me a little clarity of what that was originally? What was it originally defined as?
Well, the purpose of the district was to protect public health by restricting development in areas subject to frequent or periodic floods. This area is not in the floodplain like most of the CR district. and to conserve the natural and scenic areas generally along the major stream networks of the county. This is along a headwater area, which is definitely part of a major stream network, and yet it's not a major stream at this location. In terms of uses, the CR district allows houses just like the Ag District. It allows lots of recreational type uses that are not actually allowed in the Ag District, if that provides some information.
Ms. Petrie.
Yes, I decided that I do have a clarification question. Is there nothing in the CR zoning that gives some guidelines or prohibits what has happened to this property, so we're now having this discussion that it's no longer CR? And the second part of it is, if it was once CR, what precludes it ever being turned back into that kind of configuration?
Okay, well, first of all, the CR district, like the Ag district, is first and foremost for agriculture. And so what has happened to it is actually entirely consistent with agriculture. It could easily be left to grow up in the future, but it would still remain no larger than 32 acres and still be the only part of the CR district like that in the entire county.
Okay, Mr. Alex.
Just a quick question. I mean, I'm not opposed to this. This seems like a reasonable solution to a problem we didn't think we'd have, right? I mean, we could tell them to rezone to something that's not CR, but then you lose the protection that CR does offer to what's there. I just was wondering if Mr. Hall could speak to why this was being pursued as a text amendment as opposed to just a rezoning to something that was not CR.
Yeah, I actually have never talked to the owner of this land. That owner did not participate in the California Ridge Wind Farm. This is a text amendment. It's not a map amendment, it's a text amendment. You could, if the owner wanted to rezone this land, they could certainly request it. But again, I don't think they have any interest in rezoning it, actually. They're happy doing what they're doing, and whether it's CR or Ag, they can continue doing that.
If I could ask a follow-up then, I mean, have we received no communication at all from this landowner as to whether they want us to allow these wind farms closer to their property or not?
That's right. We've received nothing.
No communication at all.
Yeah, we haven't requested any either.
But were they noticed?
No.
I didn't notice.
Again, this is not a map amendment. This is a text amendment to the ordinance, the basic language. It's true that it's going to affect this property, but we have not. We would notify someone if we were doing a map amendment.
I guess I'm glad I asked the question, because it seems like we're singling out this one parcel for rezoning.
We're not rezoning.
Well, we're singling out. It's a distinction without a difference in this case, because we're effectively creating a different class of CR zone to which this particular provision of the ordinance doesn't apply. I mean, you could say it's a text amendment that only affects CR parcels that were smaller than 40 acres in 2009, or you could say we're effectively creating a new classification called CR2, which is subject to different wind farm ordinances, of which the only current parcel is going to be this one. I'm not sure the landowner would see the difference. And I'm a bit confused as to why we didn't ask the landowner to weigh in. I don't know if it's either Mr. Kurtz or Mr. Hall. Where are we coming from on this?
I was not familiar with this as well, Chris.
All right. Thank you.
I had assumed that it was a request by the owner of the land. I didn't know that.
Well, it's a text amendment. We don't send out notices to folks.
Mr. Benzel and then Mr. Weibel.
The reason I believe we're doing this is, I can't tell you why we haven't contacted the landowner. I don't know that. But landowners around there who are affected by that 1 mile setback that possibly could have had wind towers did not get them because of protection given to a piece of ground that isn't CR anymore. It's farm ground. And so you know, rather than rezoning that ground, we simply said this is the only piece like this in the entire county. So this is a text amendment that says we're essentially removing that protection so that if somebody comes back in and wants to build wind farms again, those landowners surrounding that that are within the 1 mile of radius of that could now participate if they want to. Right now, they've been locked out of it because of ground that has changed over the years and in my mind, would not really qualify for CR protection anymore.
Thank you, Mr. Benzel. Mr. Weibel, that's what I'm sorry.
I want to point out that the action tonight just sends us to the ZBA for a public hearing.
Yeah.
Just so if anything happens from public hearing, it'll come back to us. So we're not making any definitive action tonight other than to have it sent to public hearing. For the ZBA is where they have public hearings on this.
Pines, you're saying you wanted to go? I'm sorry.
Well, that is what we're doing.
Okay.
I think that, and first, I think that should be clarified in the motion, Mr. Kurtz. If you ask for a motion, we need to specify what we're doing. In this case, we're requesting that be sent to a ZBA meeting. I think that the county board is somewhat confused by that.
Mr. Allen.
And if I can clarify that, Pius, this is listed as direction two, so this isn't even an action item, right?
That's right. I mean, but the problem is that the direction is vague, so we're actually directing Mr. Hall to have it sent to ZBA.
Okay. Would Mr. Hall accept a friendly request that the landowner who would be affected by this be contacted prior to a ZBA hearing?
I will do that. I'll check with the state's attorney to, with your permission, I'd like to check with the state's attorney about that. We don't ordinarily do that for text amendments, and it could send confusing.
Okay, that's fine. I'm sure we got 27 people in this room who are willing to do it.
Ms. Petrie.
Well, since we don't have any wind farms knocking on the door, and this is an if, and it costs every time we send things to the ZBA, I see no reason in the world to be taking action on this, even if it means just sending it to the ZBA.
I don't know about knocking, but we already have one order knocked, and I'm hoping that we have another knock on the door very soon, and I want to make sure that we have the opportunity to open the door. Mr. Weibel.
I would hope that Mr. Hall would bundle this up with other material so that the expenses would be kept to a minimum when this goes to ZBA.
Mr. Langenheim.
Having read the text in the agenda and listened to all of this discussion, it appears to me that this piece of land should not be a conservation recreation area, and that we should be addressing the means by which we can convert it to Ag 2 or whatever is more appropriate.
Mr. Carter.
Well, I don't know, but it seemed to me that anymore we don't get the complaints. If the power company, anybody had a complaint, they come and submit it to the county board and we sit down and work it out. But anymore, we come up trying to make changes and nobody that is affected knows anything about it. And this seemed to be a problem with environmental anymore. So what I'm saying is I wish you'd go back like we used to when somebody got a personal gripe, bring it to the board, and everybody would know something about what the changes are.
Thank you, Mr. Carter.
And even send out letters to the rural homeowners or whoever going to be affected and let them know about it. So they come up here and we make these changes and we don't have to be sitting here all the time, hours and hours, on a problem and never get them really solved.
Okay. Now, Ms. Ammons.
So I just need to ask a question about what we are actually going to be voting on since this was...
I'm sorry, Carol. What were you saying?
I'm trying to clarify what it is that we are being asked to do in this case, because the actual item B does not speak to what Mr. Alex just recommended. So outside of making a motion to defer this item, we need to actually make some changes to this in order to vote tonight.
Mr. Weibel.
as I previously stated, it's a request to send this to ZBA to have a public hearing on the item.
And then that's we'll what come we're back, requesting right we'll now. Send it to the ZBA for a public hearing. I hope that's satisfactory to the board, and we can air it out in public. Okay. Okay. Lloyd? Mr. J.
Mr. Chairman.
We'll make that motion. Okay. Mr. J.
Mr. Chairman, if we approve this, we are actually just moving it to the ZBA. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct, sir.
Does the ZBA have the final determination then?
No, it comes
It'll
back
come
to
back
you.
To us again.
It comes back to us for final approval.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. So I think that clarifies it for everyone. Hopefully we can move it on. So all in favor, I'm sorry, all in favor of sending this to the ZBA, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Fine. Motion carries. Thank you. And I don't have a monthly report.
There are monthly reports at the tables.
What's that? Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. There is a report on your desk. What months are they? Just this past month.
February.
February. You have your report on monthly report on your desk.
I move it be received and placed on file.
I have moved. Second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. No other business and nothing on consent agenda. Thank you, Mr. Tom Betts.
County facility, Mr. Betts.
Ms. Petrie, I can't recognize you. I'm moving on. It's Mr. Betts's chair.
Mr. Betts?
Yes.
May we have a 5-minute break before we start on the RFP and the facilities?
Do people need a 5-minute break?
I could use it.
I'll take a 5-minute break. And I need 5 minutes. I'll start right back. Someone get me a watch.